This is Here and Now. I'm Jeremy Hobson, broadcasting from Yellowstone National Park in Wyoming as the National Park Service celebrates its 100th birthday. And the National Park Service is part of the Interior Department. Later this week, Interior Secretary Sally Jewell will be here at Yellowstone, which is America's first national park. I spoke with her the other day and started by asking her what this anniversary means to her.
It's America's best idea. 100 years ago, in 1916, to say, let's make these iconic places that helped define the United States permanent. And as we come upon this milestone anniversary, it's a great opportunity to celebrate where we've come from, but also help prepare these parks and what they stand for the next century. So it's really exciting to be in this position at this time.
And you've said that the park system needs a course correction for conservation. What does that mean?
You know, when these parks were set aside, it was viewed as, you know, these are really special places to protect, but they were within a sea of undeveloped landscapes. You know, Yellowstone set aside in the late 1800s, and Yosemite even identified as a protected area during the Civil War by President Lincoln. I don't think people realized at that time that we would be developing so much around them. And we now know through science that parks like Yellowstone can't exist as an island unto themselves. They're part of a connected ecosystem. The animals that we think of, from the bison to the grizzly bear to the wolves, don't know boundaries. And so the future of conservation is going to be more thoughtful about how we work with public landowners and other private lands to respect the fact that our political boundaries don't necessarily align with the boundaries of the critters that rely on these places and that we want to protect for future generations. So it's going to be very different in the future than it has been in the past.
But does it mean adding more national park land to connect some of these parks so that these animals can roam from one to the other? And that obviously is not a politically popular thing to do in some circles.
No, it does not mean adding national park lands. It means recognizing that as an island, a national park cannot exist without a broader connected landscape. So it means being thoughtful about where we develop and working with private landowners to have things like wildlife-friendly fences on ranches. And we've got tremendous cooperation on the private side and with states in a number of different areas in the West so that these great iconic parks like Yellowstone can continue to have the animals and the wildlife that people come to it for many years in the future. And that just requires an area that's bigger than the national park itself. It does not mean expanding the boundaries of the park.
Which park would you say is the most threatened right now?
Oh, my goodness. You know, the biggest threat that I'd say there's two areas of threat that we experience. One is climate change, and it is dramatically affecting many, many different parks. Jamestown, the first settlement of people of European origin in the United States, is experiencing sea level rise, and already many of the artifacts, Native American artifacts and also first settlers artifacts, are being unearthed because of sea level rise, and we're having to proactively remove them and curate them so that they don't get lost forever. So that's one of the major threats. The other threat really is people are very busy and parks aren't necessarily on their radar, and they don't feel as relevant to all Americans as they could. So making parks relevant to all Americans, not just those that might have had a history growing up and going to these places, is going to be really important for the future of national parks and public lands so that they have advocates across the country and across the political spectrum.
Yeah, last time we talked, we had talked about that issue, and you were setting up these kiosks in the park so that people could communicate with people in other parks and trying to bring more young people, more minorities to the parks. How did that go?
Oh, it's gone very, very well. There's two key programs that we've really been emphasizing in the last year. One that you're talking about is called Find Your Park, hashtag Find Your Park, if people are on Twitter. And that has done an incredible job of putting parks and park vacations on people's radar. So 2015 was the biggest year ever with 305 million visitors to our national parks. And we are confident that 2016, this year, the year of the centennial, will be even more than that. And we are seeing increased visitation from across our wonderfully diverse spectrum of Americans and also foreign tourists, which is exactly what we'd like to see. And the other program we've launched, which is Every Kid in a Park, free pass for every fourth grader in the United States of America to take their family, their friends, a carload into the national parks for free. And those are two ways we're trying to make the parks more accessible and relevant. So they find their park, and their park may be the African burial grounds that right in New York City. It may be the Cesar Chavez National Monument down in Southern California, places that tell a broader story of America. And that is also something that we've really been highlighting in this centennial year and beyond.
But as you've tried to make the parks more relevant to certain people, there are also complaints about the parks being loved to death, that there are so many people visiting certain parks that the parks themselves may be hurt.
Well, this is always a balancing act. We've had parks like Zion, for example, that put in place a bus system to get people out of their single occupancy vehicles and take them throughout the park. That's been very successful, but the buses are pretty crowded this year. It's partly our responsibility as the National Park Service to create opportunities to explore that don't overcrowd these areas. But I will say that until parks are relevant to all Americans, we won't put the support in place needed. And we face a maintenance backlog in park infrastructure approaching $12 billion. About half of that's roads and half of that is other infrastructure. People will go out and they will see facilities that aren't up to par. But if they have a great experience, and it's hard not to have a great experience in a place like Yellowstone and Yosemite or in some of our historical parks as you learn the journey of the United States, they will be more inclined to encourage our elected officials to support them.
Well, Sally Jewell, what do you want to accomplish in the last few months of your tenure as Interior Secretary?
Well, I've got a long list in front of me that we'd like to get done. I'm very proud of the work that has been done, both through our nonprofit partners, our volunteers, philanthropists, on the National Park Centennial, and the fact that the National Park Service is America's storyteller. We don't just preserve beautiful natural places; we tell the story of America. More out there than it ever has been before. So I will be traveling all over the country telling that story. A lot of other things going on in Interior, of course, that I'll be working on between now and the end of the year, from supporting trust and treaty obligations to our first Americans and continuing a march toward a cleaner energy future. So lots to do.
And will there be any more national monument or national park designations, do you think, from President Obama before he leaves?
There are lots of places that warrant protection. President's made it clear that he's willing to use his authority under the Antiquities Act if Congress is unwilling to act. And so there are a number of areas that are under consideration. And if Congress doesn't act, there's a good chance that the president will.
I have to ask you one more thing that we didn't talk about last time we spoke, but it is something that I've become a big fan of, and a lot of other people too, more than a million people now, are following you guys on Instagram. They're following the National Park Service and the Interior Department. What is that about? Is that about just selling people on wilderness and wildlife and the national parks? And why do you think it's been so successful?
Well, Instagram is a wonderful vehicle to really leverage the fact that a picture tells a thousand words. And we have so much incredible photography that, you know, citizens out there take and send to us. And so, yes, we've got a great following on Instagram. I'm the envy of some of my cabinet colleagues because their portfolios don't necessarily lend themselves to the visual imagery that we have. But It's inspirational.
The poor Department of Energy just doesn't get the same love on Instagram, probably.
Well, yeah. You know, people find inspiration in those images. And, you know, with the ability to do video and live cams on, you know, eagles and ospreys and bears, and it's pretty inspirational. And we believe that technology can be used as a tool to connect people to nature. It doesn't need to be a tool to keep us away from nature. And the more we can use imagery and fun things like the cameras that are on the wildlife to inspire people to actually get out there and see these places themselves, we think is a great thing.
So what's next for you after the Obama administration?
A long, slow road trip to really deeply enjoy our public lands in a way that this job hasn't afforded me to do. that is my plan, is to return to Seattle, but to do it with a long, slow road trip through many of our nation's public lands before I decide what's next.
That's Interior Secretary Sally Jewell. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And as we were hearing from Sally Jewell there, Old Faithful went off again, erupting right now, right in front of us. We got an eruption yesterday, live on the air, and another one today. You're listening to Here and Now, live from Old Faithful.